Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life. Firefighters to foodies, bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. At this stage, it's almost difficult to remember pre-COVID Port Townsend. I don't know about you, but I find it difficult to remember a time when we could just go to any old restaurant we wanted to. Back then, many of the restaurants around here were actually open for both lunch and dinner. That's pretty rare these days. Back then, restaurants stayed open more than 3 days a week. Back then, you didn't have to show a vaccination card to go to a movie. Back then, we all came and went pretty much as we wanted to. Times have changed. Now, far too many of our small businesses have folded. Despite government help, they just couldn't hang on any longer. There are a few perpetual optimists who've stepped in. A few are even opening new restaurants or businesses. We're all rooting for them. If you go downtown now, there are a fair number of tourists. It's hard to know exactly what they're able to do or see, but I guess they can enjoy the sea and sun when we have it. They don't seem to be spending quite as much money as they used to, but who knows? It almost feels like we've all been sleepwalking. Meanwhile, here at KPTZ, we've continued producing high-quality local programming. This show, Our Town, is a way for listeners to get to know some fascinating individuals who live and work on the peninsula. Today, my guest is someone who fills a position that is so very important to our local economy. My guest today is Betsy Davis, who is the executive director of the Northwest School of Wooden Boats. So welcome to the show, Betsy.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
So before we talk about the Wooden Boat School, I always open the show by asking people whether they're local. Were you born and bred on the peninsula?
I was not born and bred here. I envy those who were. I was drawn here by the incredible spirit of craftsmanship,
so where
the
do
natural
you come
beauty
from
Seattle.
Seattle,
where I grew up.
Okay. And what did your folks do?
In my family, my mom was a homemaker and my dad was an attorney.
Are you an only child?
I am the youngest of six kids.
Oh, okay. And in your home, was there sort of an expectation you might go to university?
Yeah, I think that was probably considered what each of the kids would go on to do.
Okay, and where did you end up going?
I ended up going to Stanford University.
But we skipped over your high school experience. I just want to take a second to find out, what were you like in high school, or what did your peers think you were like?
Oh, I was a quiet nerd person. People probably wouldn't have noticed. And my activity I did was debate. And I was kind of a bookworm.
Okay. Now, Stanford, what did you end up majoring in?
I was a history major. I got a history major.
And did you have any plans about what you were going to do career-wise with your history degree?
I did not.
Okay. And so you graduated, and what did you do first?
The first thing I did is I went to Washington, D.C. and worked with a group called the National Women's Health Network on some health issues. And then I came back to Seattle and started looking for work.
And where did you end up?
Well, first I ended up at a small self-service computer place, and this is before computers were as ubiquitous as they are now, and so I taught myself a little bit about computers by building what was called a Heath kit, and at some point that business went away, and I started doing temp work and ended up at a small company on the east side that was growing, and that was Microsoft.
Wow. How small was it when you joined?
I think I was around 400 or something.
Considering today how many hundreds of thousands of people they employ, that's pretty early. So we've all heard the stories about certain early employees for Microsoft, and not just Microsoft, other tech companies who walk away with stock options and are frankly, millionaires. I've heard a few billionaires, but I don't know how many of those there are. So were you fortunate enough to get in on any of that action?
Thank you. I was fortunate in a lot of ways. And relative to the stock options, yes, I did get some. And that's what gave me the freedom to reinvent myself later in life so I could go to boat building school and do everything else I did. But I wasn't one of the big movers and shakers.
How long were you at Microsoft?
About 14 years.
And I realize in that length of time you did several different jobs.
Yeah.
But what is one or two of the most memorable things you worked on while you were there?
I had the privilege of living in Ireland for a couple of years. And boy, did I learn from the people that I got to live and work with over there. It was just wonderful. And I also got the joy of being part of a startup of Slate Magazine, Magazine of Arts and Culture. And it was just another really fun thing to try to invent something.
Yeah, I used to really love Slate when it first came out. It had a voice that was fairly unique at that time. You know, when we were talking the other day, you told me something that sort of stuck in my mind, that when you were in Ireland, one of the lessons you learned was how the philosophy of work to live, not live to work.
Yeah, I just really loved the idea that in Ireland, for me, I just learned, make time to sit down and chat with people. And yes, let's work hard and do a great job, but then let's take time to sit down and just be human beings with each other. And I carry that with me, and I learned that from being over there.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a really excellent philosophy. Mm-hmm. More people should adopt that.
Yeah, I agree.
So after a fair chunk of time, you decided to leave Microsoft. Was there any particular reason?
You know, I think in my life, periodically, I change jobs when I realize I've worked with a particular set of problems and I want to go work with a new set of problems. And I was tired and ready to try something new.
And so what did you try?
Well, I did try running my own business for a while, a gift shop, Portage Bay Goods, with products with recycled made from recycled materials and handcrafted items, both made locally and in Ireland. And it was really creative and really fun, but I realized retail wasn't my raison d'etre. And because of the early Microsoft stock options, I had a chance to reinvent. I knew I needed to keep working and come up with another job, but I decided to go to boat building school. I went on a retreat and read my old journals and realized I'd always wanted to learn how to build a boat. And there's a wonderful program in Seattle at what was then Seattle Central Community College. And I signed up and got 2 years of training in building boats.
Were you one of these people who basically learned boating from when you were, you know, knee-high to a grasshopper because your parents boated?
Oh, that's so great. My family did have a boat until I was 4 years old. And then I think we had smaller boats, canoes, and I went to Girl Scout camp. So that's probably where I mostly learned to be on the water.
Okay. So when you had your retail shop, where was it located?
Oh, it was up in the Pike Pine neighborhood, just above the convention center. And then over time, I opened a second store over in Fremont.
Okay. At that point in time, the Pike Pine district was
really
different.
Really interesting neighborhood. I found it so refreshing, just the combination of all the people, kind of gritty and artsy and creative and entrepreneurial and social conscience. And yeah, just it was really a active time, and I sure enjoyed it.
So was the shop or the whole enterprise profitable?
Yes, I didn't rake in tons of money, but I was able to break even and have a little money to reinvest in the business.
Yeah, so well, that's pretty
good. It worked
out. And so when you left, what happened to the company?
I'm delighted to say one of the employees bought the company.
Excellent.
And carried it forward. Not in Pike Pine, they closed, but it's open down in Fremont.
So it's still open?
Yeah. Last I knew.
Okay. That's great. And so you went to Wooden Boat School in Seattle.
Yes.
That's interesting. Well, what was there any particular thing that prompted that
well,
next change
I
there?
Cannot necessarily explain why I was interested in boats, but I've always been one of those people. You're driving down the freeway and you see a boat on someone's car, like, oh, look at the boat. And I'm not aspiring to be a blue water sailor or something like that. It's just, I think the combination of form, function, and beauty all wrapped up into one thing is really interesting. And I love being on and near the water, and boats make that possible.
So did you own a boat at that point in time?
I probably owned a few kayaks at that time.
Okay.
Oh, no. Thank you. When I turned 40, I purchased a boat called Glory B, and she's been with me and been my teacher for the second part of my life. And I purchased her and just started to learn how to take her out on the water and take care of her.
Well, the Glory B isn't just any boat, right? How old is she?
Well, Glory B was built in 1914 over on Vashon Island in the Taylor Grandy Yard, and she's a double-ended powerboat, and she has really been in the Northwest her entire life since 1914.
Wow. When you purchased her, was she in ship shape?
I would say a wooden boat is never done, and so she was in reasonable condition, but there's always more one can keep doing.
And so you owned the boat. You went to wooden boat school. Was part of it that you were planning on doing all the work yourself?
Right. Both things. I wanted to learn the skills to work on the boat, but I also wanted to work somehow in the field of boat building. Wasn't sure what it would look like. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be a fairly large task to boat that large to bring it up to snuff.
Right. At that point, it would have been maintaining it more than bringing it up to snuff. It was subsequent things that made it a challenge. So in, I think it was February 2002, Glory B burned and sank in a marina fire at Seattle Yacht Club. And it was devastating because like 13 boats burnt and sank, and another 7 boats were really, really badly damaged. And Glory B was one of the ones that sank. And when the Coast Guard reported it, they said she was gone. And I was just so sad.
Heartbroken.
Yeah, sad and heartbroken. And it wasn't until 3 weeks later that they were starting to salvage the boats that we got to see her condition.
And so what happened?
Well, there was a brilliant steam crane operator bringing the boats that had sunk up to put them on a barge. And he knew I might want to restore her. And so the divers went down and put the straps around the boat, and the steam crane lifted her up on her side, and then all of a sudden spun her so her bottom was towards the water and dropped her on the water, and she floated.
Wow.
And my instructor from boat school was on the shore, and I was on the dock. And
that's amazing.
He knew that I had an interest in possibly restoring her, and he decided that if I would be able to pay the cost of materials, we could restore her in the boat building program, and it'd be a good project for the students. So I worked hard to figure out what the budget would be to figure out how that could be met with the insurance that I was getting from the fire. And we came up with a plan, and he said, okay, restoration of the boat would be a suitable project for the students. So that became engrossing for the next chunk of time.
Yeah, that's really amazing. It's sort of a fortuitous that essentially you got sort of a free crew to work on it. And the students were...
Yeah, it was a win-win because
they were
as
learning.
Students, of whom I was one, the students could work with really fine materials on a neat project and with no pressure on deadline, because the customer is not in charge in a school environment. The students are there to learn.
Right.
And that it's going to take as much time as it takes for that to happen.
You were learning with them, too.
Oh, yeah. And I was learning so much.
Yeah. And so how many hours do you estimate were spent
That
restoration?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know. It was about 3.5 years and, a couple hundred students. And I can't do the math that fast, but hundreds and hundreds of hours went into
it. Probably thousands.
And it probably would have been much more efficient in a professional yard, but it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So it was really a learning platform for the students. And it also helped preserve a part of Northwest history.
You stayed with it, of course.
Yes, until I needed to get a job.
Yeah, well, because the program's a 2-year program, and you mentioned it took 3.5 years to restore
and so I stayed on for an extra year to help keep working on the boat and procuring the parts and that kind of stuff, but I needed to start finding a job.
Okay, so next step, finding that job. What did you do?
Thank goodness for mentors. My instructor from school knew I was looking for a job, and there was an opening for executive director at the Center for Wooden Boats. And he said, why don't you apply for that? How many jobs do you think are going to come up that combine project management, my old life, and boats, my new life, unless you want to run a boatyard? And I was like, oh, no. And so with his encouragement, I applied for a job at Center for Wooden Boats, where he and I had both been on the board some number of years before. So I was familiar with the organization and loved it. And was fortunate to get hired. So I got to work there 11 years, and I thought I was going to be taking care of a fleet of little wooden boats. And it turned out to be more about learning how to preserve and grow a community-based organization in the midst of all the development going on in South Lake Union.
What were the years that you were there? Dates, roughly?
Oh, yeah. I think I was there 11 years, and I left in 2014. So 2003 to 2014.
Okay. So you were there during the so-called big recession.
That might be one of the many things that was challenging during that time.
Yeah. Do you remember how your group got through that period of time?
You know, there were a lot of challenges we faced, and that would be one challenge. But I think the bigger challenges were the redevelopment of Lake Union Park and the whole South Lake Union neighborhood. So The biggest way we pulled through was there were hundreds and hundreds of volunteer hours every year that went in to the center, where people could come down and learn how to get in a boat and go out on the water. And it was open to everybody. And there were a lot of people who showed up at community meetings and community planning meetings. So I think it was really, really effective grassroots organization.
Okay, and how did you end up coming to Port Townsend?
Right. Well, I mentioned periodically I like to switch around. And
but why here?
So this, the job as executive director at the Northwest School of Wooden Boat Building came up. And I came up for some informational interviews just to check it out. And I was really excited by what I saw. And that includes a board that was really ready to try some new things and support the executive director, and a really brilliant lead instructor, Sean Coleman, who was ready to help lead the organization forward on the technical side. I could be the administrative side. And then members of the community who had a lot of enthusiasm and felt like the skills that I might bring would be a good match for the organization. And then there's the natural environment, and I have never had a chance to live on saltwater shores. And
well, were you quite familiar with Port Townsend and the Olympic Peninsula? Had you already been here?
Oh, I had some familiarity. I'd certainly come up for the Wooden Boat Show before. Right. I'd visited the school before. And on a personal level, I had a cabin out at Lake Quinault for years, and that was a real special place for me. And so, yeah, I love the Olympic Peninsula. Yeah. It's just an amazing spot in the world.
Okay. Before we talk about what you're doing now, I think most of our listeners have heard of the Wooden Boat School, but why don't you give us a little recap, like when was it started, how big is it, you know, some of those practical details.
Oh, cool. So the school was founded here in Port Townsend. It's a local institution. I think it was something like 1981 or 1983, And it grew gradually. It started in the boatyard. It moved up to Otto Street in probably around 2000. Property was acquired at the south end of Port Townsend Bay in Port Hadlock, and it came in down there. And over time, the programs have grown. Right now, there's a 1-year Associate of Occupational Studies degree program in boat building. And there's a 9-month program in marine systems, which covers things like engines and plumbing and electrical, so forth. So we probably have a range of 40 to 70 students a year. It depends on the year and the amount of interest in the different programs.
I don't think our listeners would be that familiar with what you're calling the systems program. So could you just describe
that? Absolutely. you know, when I first started at the boat school, we talked to employers in the community and said, is a wooden boat school relevant anymore? Mm-hmm. And, you know, elephant in the room, let's get it on the table. And the employers, both in traditional yards and also working on contemporary projects, said, yes, we hire your graduates, because even though they're not going to necessarily build a new wooden boat in our shops, they know how to work with shape and work with wood and how to problem solve and how to read plans and how to measure and how to, when a repair comes in, they can really think it through. But you have to add a program to teach the rest of the stuff we do in the boatyard. And that has to do with the other components, not just the whole deck and house. We have engines, outboard engines, diesel engines. We have electrical systems to keep everything functioning. Oh, right, there's a head, there's plumbing, so we need plumbing, HVAC, steering and controls, propulsion, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, that takes in quite a lot.
Yes.
How many systems do you think here?
Well, we have about 10 sections in the program. Yeah. And we started the program at 6 months, and we've run it successfully there. And students are getting jobs. Employers are hiring our graduates. But we decided to extend it to 9 months because there is so much to cover. And the technology keeps changing.
Yeah.
We're just adding a section now on electric propulsion. So people have a chance to change out from diesel propulsion to electric propulsion. The students will do that and back to diesel. And they'll get a chance to use the boat in between, too, to see how it operates differently as well. And so we need to stay current. Solar okay. technology also.
Do any students take both programs? Because it sounds like they're fairly different.
They are fairly different. And we've had more students taking both than we'd initially anticipated. They can take them in either order. I mean, someone can just take one or the other or both yeah. in either order. And it's really exciting to see the skill set they have when
what
they come out of both.
What are the prerequisites to enroll in the school?
Okay, this is what I think is magic about the school. It's the teachers are the magic. The only prerequisite is a high school degree or equivalent. And the school is open to people who are 18 years old and graduated from high school, or we've had people 85 years old. So it's a real range. And the bulk is more people who are maybe in their early 30s switching careers. But it's magic because the instructors have a crew in their shops who have such variation in their backgrounds and ability to.
So at any one point in time, you have students, you know, from 18 to
yep.
80,
yeah.
sort of loosely
exactly.
speaking.
Yeah. yeah.
That's sort of cool.
yeah, it's a wonderful. I've heard from alums before, part of what they loved about the school is just the multi-generational aspect of it and learning from each other. We really do prioritize people who want to go into the trade.
Right.
But that independent of age.
The students who enroll, some of them are changing careers, as
yes.
you said.
Yes.
Which is an interesting thing
yeah.
in itself. But do they get hired? Is it an asset to get a degree from the
yes.
wooden boat school?
It's really exciting to be part of something where there is demand for people
yes.
on the other side. And I think one of the things that's wonderful is that somebody in a year can develop the skills and experience to then get hired. And there's really strong demand for people who can work with their hands.
I think you told me that roughly 70% of your students get a job in the marine trades.
Yep. And we can't guarantee the jobs, but for us to stay accredited, we have to document and have it verified by an outside company that at least 70% of each cohort are ending up in jobs, paid jobs, using the skills they've learned at the school. So we work very hard to make sure that what we're teaching is relevant to the industry and that industry is part of the process of defining our priorities for the curriculum.
And you're a nonprofit.
Yes, we are.
This number of people getting jobs in the field must help in terms of raising funds.
I think the important thing for raising funds is to demonstrate impact. Right. And the wonderful thing is we can do that both quantitatively and qualitatively. We have all the data for graduation records, employment records for all the years the school's been around. But we also have individual stories that are so moving.
Well, some of the more prominent marine trade companies around town are run by graduates of your program. Can you just name two or three of them?
Shipwrights Co-op has a number of people who work there, including the owners. And Stephen Gale at Haven Boatworks, of course, is also an alum of the school. I think taught at the school at some point. Yeah, it's exciting.
Okay. I would be remiss if I didn't at least get you to touch on what COVID did to the school.
Challenging.
Everyone got hit.
Challenging. The initial impact is the school had to close. And that's hard. We have all these students who've come from around the country here, and that was in March of 2020. And we didn't know how long we were going to be closed for. So we said, okay, we're going to be closed for 2 weeks. And then we're like, let's do scenario planning. Maybe we'll be closed for a month. And little did we know, we'd be closed until the beginning of July that year. So we were closed for 3 months. A challenge with that is that meant the students who were enrolled in programs for the spring, it was delayed to summer. And it was amazing that about 2/3 of the students hung on and stayed with the program and came back. And that, I think it was the way we taught had to change. It, you know, all the safety practices and fewer people in the shops and separate pods for each shop and all of that. It also delayed the start of our next program. So we had lower enrollment than we were, you know, planning for the subsequent year. But I'm thrilled to say we're back. We're back.
We pulled through. We're running really short on time here, but I did want to touch on your boat. Because I believe you're planning a big adventure on the boat later this summer.
Yes, for the first time ever, I'm going to cruise on Glory B, and I'm looking forward to it. I have I think I'm most amazed at the marine trades in this town and the skills that people provide as we're getting ready the cruise. Hardware for the boat from Pete Langley, getting the rigging on the mast from Ian Weedman, getting canvas work done, Inger Rankins. I mean, it's just amazing. You can point in this town and there are such talented people. And I'm looking forward to going with a couple really capable people and exploring the north.
It sounds amazing. Well, I hate to tell you this, but we're really out of time. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Maryam McNellis. My guest today has been Betsy Davis, Executive Director of the Northwest School of Wooden Boats. I also want to thank Taylor Clark, editor and producer of Our Town. Many of you don't realize how important the role of an editor is on a show like this. He can edit out mumbles, jumbles, errs, and even you knows. He makes us sound so much more eloquent and smooth. In addition to thanking both Betsy and Taylor, I want to thank you, the listener. Thank you for sticking with KPTZ during the troubled times. We're all limping through this damn pandemic together. Meanwhile, keep listening to KPTZ. We're a community radio station by and for the people of Jefferson County. Everyone who works here is a volunteer. We give our time because we all believe Jefferson County needs a free local voice. So listeners, stay safe, stay healthy. The show is called Our Town. I'm Maryam McNellis. I'm signing off for today, but please keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Maryam McNellis and edited by Taylor Clark.